I didn't expect that. Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Also, we're allowed to use the first floor of this church. There's no reason to go upstairs at any time. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting on the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're going to do step two in two parts, and tonight is part one of step four. What did I say? I knew I was wrong. I just didn't know what it was. We're going to do step four, part one, and I'm going to turn the meeting over to Graham.
So there's a whole bunch of people happy to point out you were wrong, David.
I admit it.
Good evening. I'm Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting tonight. David and I started this meeting up just a few months ago in David's living room, and the reason we started it up is because we wanted to share our experience, strength, and hope of taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and changing our lives and being relieved of the obsession to drink alcohol, and we wanted to transmit that in a very simple fashion. Neither of us are experts on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There's people in here that know more about it than we do. We're not here to teach people about AA. We're just here simply to share our experience, strength, and hope, hopefully helping someone and helping ourselves in the process. So we have covered the first three steps. And last week we really left up that it was all about selfishness. And what the book's going to do tonight, it basically breaks selfishness down. It says that's the root of the problem, and then it gives three ways that selfishness manifests in an alcoholic's life. And we're going to talk about the most important way tonight, which is resentment. And really that's going to be the topic of tonight's meeting. Anyway, so let's read the book. We're going to start off on page 63, and it's just the last two lines, next we launched. Down at the bottom on page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. So that paragraph, my experience with that is my first sponsor was a guy that was very much telling me that AA was a program of simple actions. It wasn't a program of simple thinking or simple believing or simple wishing. It was a program of simple actions. And that really this fourth step was a very important action for me to engage with as soon as possible after having come to Alcoholics Anonymous. We hear all sorts of stuff about the fourth step. I've been going to meetings for years and I've heard a lot of stuff, you know, don't do the fourth step until you're a year sober or whatever, and there's all these conditions put on it. And that's the great thing about the book. Let's just read what it says in here, what these guys that started AA thought we should do. And so basically after saying the third step prayer, I met with my sponsor the next time and he took me through the instructions on how to do the fourth step. And I'm a guy that I really just keep in my head a list of what people have done wrong to me. That's basically what I do. I just go around all the time and everybody's slighted me or harmed me in some way. It might not even be real, but to me it's real. And when I see people, that's typically what comes to the front of my mind. So what it's asking me to do is to clean that out the way. And then it goes on to say that though step three was vital and crucial, it won't have permanent effect unless it's followed at once by this effort to face and be rid of. So how that looked for me was, after saying step three, it was time to get on to step four. And finally, it recaps what we've already talked about. And this is really the central idea of I think, of the whole AA program. You know, this is all about drinking, but it's not really about drinking. And, you know, what I've come to understand the longer I've been in AA is that alcohol was never really the problem. I love drinking alcohol. I love getting drunk. Alcohol was the solution to the problem, and I didn't know that. It seemed to me after a while that alcohol was the problem. But you take alcohol away from me, and all that happens to me is I feel even worse. That's really what happens. I feel more desperate. I feel more self-pitying. I feel more alone. I feel more afraid. I feel more suicidal. I feel more angry. That's how I feel when I'm sober. And then drinking makes that feel better, until it doesn't. So what it's telling me is that I've been blocked off. I've been blocked off from living sober. And it's time to get rid of these things. And that's really what we're going to look at in step four.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, there's so much in here. Because we've come through, alcohol was the solution, right? This idea, alcohol was treating my alcoholism. And that doesn't work anymore, and we go through the ABCs, all the things that we talked about last night, and you know, in my mind, once I stop drinking, everything's going to be fine. And I say this all the time, but you stop drinking, you feel better. You feel anger better. You feel self pity better. You feel your hurt feelings better. You know, people look at you funny. You don't like it, and now I can't drink. Damn it. You know, so there's a couple of things though that jump out at me in this, because we've made this decision, and then immediately next we launched into a course of vigorous action, and he uses words like strenuous, vigorous, now, you know, vital, crucial, all these things. This line, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, and it was pointed out to me that he's referring to the third step. This decision to get this new attitude that hereafter in this drama of life, you know, we're going to go back to this keystone idea that God's going to be the director. I'm the actor. He's the principal. I'm the agent. He's the father. I'm the child. I'm in the world to play the role he assigns. That simple idea is going to come up all through the rest of the steps. He says, so our decision to adopt this new attitude, to practice this new attitude, was vital and crucial. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. And the guy who read that to me told me, this tells me that the third step wears off. It'll have little or no permanent effect unless at once followed by. So it's really just a prelude or a stage setter for the rest of the actions. And then the other thing that I, because I don't get into the 4-step, 10-step argument, I'm not interested in that at all, but just because I love peeking ahead, when you look on page 84 and it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And he reminds us that we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness. Talked about it last week. Dishonesty, resentment, tonight's topic, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God. So, what was explained to me was that this process, this 4-step process, this 4 through 9, this house cleaning that we're about to vigorously commence, where two things are going to happen. We're going to clean up our past, which we've never attempted to do. But we're also going to learn skills that we're going to need to continue for the rest of our lives. This inventory is also not a one-and-done kind of a thing. So we're going to get down to causes and conditions.
Yeah. Okay, so we're just going to continue on page 64. From therefore. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. So, the book gives me this image. It's almost like a parable, and it talks about a business, you know, and if you imagine that we have a business, it's some sort of store. There's a chair here you can sit in if you want. Come on in, the water's nice and warm. If you imagine we've got a store, a fruit and vegetable store, and I've got a whole bunch of rotting fruit and vegetable in the bag and I'm putting it out on the shelf trying to sell it to people. Those bananas are not really that bad. I know they're all brown, but don't worry, they'll be good. They'll be good inside. You know, those apples that are covered in maggots are not really that bad. I'll give you them half price. Come on. Throw me a bowl. You know, so if you can imagine running a business like that with all the, you know, we're not taking an inventory, we have no idea what we've got, we don't know what we're selling. It's just all nasty. And really what we're talking about here is getting a look at what we've actually got on hand. But we're not talking about a business, I'm talking about my life. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt every day for a long time I considered killing myself. I felt absolutely terrible. I destroyed my relationships with my parents, with my sisters. I'd ruined many friendships. I'd lost many opportunities because of continued drinking and the way I behaved, thought, and felt when I wasn't drinking as well as when I was drinking. I just was very, very miserable. And I was 25 years old. Just absolutely desperate. So that's really my business. That's running my business my way. I ran it into the ground. I was in effect bankrupt, which is another image that the book uses as well. This idea that I'm bankrupt. If things are not going well. I've come up against a wall now. So what am I going to do about it? And it's asking me just to sort of stand back and take a look at it. Let's see what we've got. And if I'm to be successful, I really have to get down to what's going on here. And I love this paragraph here. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. So what are the flaws in my makeup that caused me to fail? What are the flaws in my makeup that wind me up curled up in a ball on the floor wishing I was dead again? What are the flaws in my makeup that I tell myself I'm not going to do it again and then on Friday I take a drink and I end up doing it all over again? What is it that's wrong with me? What's bringing me to that point over and over and over again until finally I just can't stand it and I want to die at 25 years old? I wish I was dead. That's the best I can do. What is that? What is it that's wrong with me? Well, the big book in AA is going to look at exactly that. And what it said last week in step 3 was that selfishness is the problem. And immediately I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm really a nice guy. I really am. Look, I did the dishes for my mother. Or whatever. You know, I'm a nice guy. I have great intentions. But what the book says is that, no, that's not going to cut it. And we have to look at the ways in which this selfishness has manifested in my life. And there's 3 common ways that selfishness manifests that basically cause me to fail. So, the first one is resentment, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And really, like David was saying, what I didn't realize was when I was drinking and in between the drunks when I was before I came into AA, and even after I've come into AA when I get off the AA beam, I really have a problem, a flaw, which doesn't allow me to really live in the moment. I'm living in my mind in the past, or I'm living in my mind in the future. I'm very, very rarely right here in the room with other people, whether it's my children or my wife or the people at work. I'm always somewhere else. I'm worrying about something that happened in the way back in the past and will I get found out? Or I'm worrying about something and thinking about something that hasn't even happened yet. And these are really the things that drive me. And these are really forms of selfishness. And what they really do is they make it impossible for me to have any peace of mind. And I think that's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, that first paragraph he makes that analogy to the business and the inventory. And then basically in the second paragraph he says, we did exactly the same thing with our lives. And he uses, in the first paragraph he uses the phrase, discover the truth. And in the second paragraph he says, took stock honestly. So one of the things that was with me all my life, and I've described it here before, was that disconnect between my intentions and my actions. Because I have an understanding about honesty. I have an understanding about partnership. I have an understanding about integrity. I have an understanding of reciprocity. I have an understanding of consideration. I want to be a friend. I want to be a partner. I want to be a citizen of the world in peaceful abiding, you know. These are all the things that I value. Yet when I'm drinking, when I'm drunk, I'm marauding, basically. I'm lying, I'm cheating, I'm stealing, I'm breaking promises, bones are breaking. All, you know, I mean, it's just pandemonium. So there's this constant disconnect or gulf between what I intend and what I'm actually able to do. And then, so now to live comfortably with that in between binges, you've got to develop some sort of ideas about the world that make sense to you too. And I think that this is part of what he's talking about with the just the basic value of what's on the shelf. We're going to look at it. We don't have to judge it. We're just invited to see what's there and accept it for what it is. And I was thinking about the very first AA meeting that I went to that I arrived at by accident. I was 22 years old. I was in a little 72-hour detox facility. My arms were black and blue from intravenous drug use. I hadn't slept in 3 or 4 days. I was basically incoherent, hostile towards the idea of going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was interested in just cooling off and taking a break. And I remember sitting in that room and telling those people, and it absolutely looked like God's waiting room to me. Some of them really were on oxygen. It was just not, it was not an appealing group of people for a 22-year-old. So in that condition, I told those people, I said, look, this is fine for you, but I'm different. I need to check out of reality from time to time with chemicals, and if I don't have that option, I will in fact lose my mind. And they just said something like, you know, that's good, dear, keep coming back, you know. But I must have believed that. That must have been my truth, because I said it vehemently. I didn't make it up. I really believed that was the truth. Another silly example of that is that when I got here, I thought that sarcasm was a character asset. I valued it in you, and I valued it in me, you know? And the Greek or Latin root of that word means literally to cut or tear flesh. So it's not really a warm, it's not a warm and fuzzy sort of a word, really. But so these are the things that are on my shelf when I get here, and all we're being invited to do is, let's, why don't we look at the truth? Your way hadn't been working so well, has it, David? No. You're ready for a change? Yes. You're willing to adopt a new attitude about this, ready to seek a higher power? Yes. All right, well, let's get down to causes and conditions. Let's get some of this stuff down on paper. And nowhere in here does it say, wait for 2 years after you've consulted every good mind in Alcoholics Anonymous before proceeding. It says now. Okay.
Let's continue, please, on page 64. And we're just going to go from the word resentment. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Now, this is the absolute favourite time to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, right here. There's the door, goodbye. And I've, for the last 15 years, I've sat down with dozens and dozens of men at Starbucks, all over the world. In Japan, in Scotland, and right here in the US of A. And this is usually the last time I see the guy. I have to tell you that. And it's funny, except it's not funny because most of those guys drink again and some of them kill themselves and die. You know, ha ha ha. So this really is the time to go. And the other time to go is number 9. That's the time to go because I don't want to do this. I don't want to look at any of this stuff. Because you see, what this does is this destroys my ability to continue to drink. Because if I believe this stuff, which is really what I live, is in the cause, then I've got every justification in the world to drink. Not only to drink, but to treat you bad. And that's the function of resentment in my life. That's the function of resentment, which, remember, is selfishness. That's all this is, it's just selfishness. And what it does is, it allows me to justify drinking, and it allows me to justify using and abusing every one of you. It allows me to justify stealing money out of my mother's purse. It allows me to justify stealing money from my grandmother's purse. It allows me to justify telling any lie that I have to tell so that I can get what I want, drunk or sober, before I came to AA or since I came to AA. That's the function of this in my life. And I don't even want to talk about that because I'm nice, Graham, and I'm a good guy. And I want you to like me. So I'm never going to admit it. And here we are, broken and flawed. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is it. So we wrote that up on the board, and the reason was David and I were horrified because we kept meeting these guys in sponsorship who claimed to have been through the big book with a sponsor. And we showed them this and they're like, what's that, man? So I'm not saying there's only one way to do an inventory. I think the worst thing I can do is not do the inventory. Right? There's lots of ways to do inventories, but this is the way it suggests that we do it in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've taken inventories like this. And I took the liberty, the book's got an example of just doing a little example. These are some current resentments which I am, petting at the moment? Coveting, I don't know what the word is, smoothing them. Oh, my father-in-law. So I'm resentful of my father-in-law. Why? He's got a lot more money than me. And that really pisses me off. He's a fixer. If anything goes wrong with our house, he can come over and fix it. I can't. So guess who my wife calls when the sink's blocked up? She doesn't call me. Why would she call me? I'll just stand and look at it. Oh, that's nasty. Oh. My father-in-law will come over and fix it. Can you even build that whole house again? That really annoys me. The other thing is he loves hunting. This guy doesn't just like get a gun and shoot stuff. He makes his own bows and arrows and goes out and harvests the deer. And he wants my kids to do it. So last Christmas my kids get these camouflage onesies. I'm not kidding. You can imagine how I was feeling. And the last thing, which I really don't want to admit, I owe him money. I owe him money. I needed money and he lent me money. So, no wonder I'm resentful at the guy. And how does this affect me? My self-esteem. I feel like I'm not a good man. I'm not able to look after my family or something. It affects my security because now I have to give him that money back, which means less money for me. It affects my pride because I'm a very prideful person. I like to think of myself as independent and all this. And that's not the truth. I'm not independent. I've relied on this guy. He's helped me. My family wouldn't be where it is if it wasn't for him. And that really annoys me. And the last thing is it affects my sex relations. Because when my wife calls him to fix the sink, me and her have an argument. And then I'm sleeping on the sofa. So there you go. And then the next one's the Bank of America. So it talks about people, right? So it's not just my father-in-law, but like a big list of people in there. The closer you are, the more likely I'm going to be hating you. The bank, and then it talks about institutions, so a bank's an institution. I signed up for a credit card, I missed a couple of payments, and they put the interest rate up to 33% and started burning my phone up. What's that all about? You know what I mean? Jesus, you're kidding me? 33%. So every time the phone goes, I'm like hitting ignore, and then I'm all mad. Those people are criminals. Wall Street criminals. Them and the government are screwing me, they're screwing the little man. But hold on a minute, I signed a contract that said if I missed a couple of payments, they could put the interest rate up whatever they wanted. Oh, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about how they're screwing me over. And again, it affects my self-esteem and my security. And then there's a principle at the bottom, earning a living. I'm naturally lazy. You know, I'll just put that out there. I'm great at the interview. I always kill the interview with this accent and this honest face. They can't say no. They're like, let's get this guy on board. Let's give him a job right now. And then, of course, I'm like, I was just telling David today, you know, 3 o'clock comes round today. I'm like, you know, I've made a bunch of calls today. I might just cut out. You know, lazy. So I don't like this principle because it takes all my time. I have to give these people my time. I don't understand why I should have to work for money when there's all these rich people that don't have to work. I don't really know any of them, but they are there. Believe me, they're there. And just money in general. You know, why doesn't somebody just put 10K a month in my bank account and leave me alone? That's not too much to ask. And again, my self-esteem, my security, and my pride are affected by this. So that's what it's asking me to do. It takes a while to write all this down. The book seems to suggest that I do one column at a time, so I write down all the people, just their names, and then all the institutions and all the principles. Then I go on to the cause and go down that, and then I go on to how it affects me. Rather than writing them across, the book seems to suggest we do them like one column at a time. And that's as far as we've got in the text.
I was going to say something else, but I'm going to follow up on that because that what you just said absolutely was the difference between this being a usable tool for me and some sort of penance, you know. Mm-hmm. Because if you try to work left to right, you know, I'm mad at my father-in-law. Why? Because blah 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 blah. And what does that affect? Self-esteem. And where was I? You know, what did I do? You know. You're switching mental gears the whole time for through each column, and it's exhausting. You get one of those done, and you're like, oh God, how many more of these do I have? You know, but if you go top down, you know, like what I usually do is just I'll just brainstorm a list of people I'm mad at. You know, I'm mad at this, that, and the other thing, blah blah blah, blah until that's done, and then I'll start moving them over to column B. And we all know column B. You can go into any bar and pull up a chair right now, and you're going to hear column B. You know? And that's my natural mode, too. You know? And if you're buying the drinks, I'll listen to your comedy.
That guy's like, you're a saint.
So then, but if I'm thinking about the cause, and then I exhaust the cause, and the cause, and then, so that mental energy of it moving in the columns up and down, eventually it gets done left to right. That simple thing made all the difference for me in making this a tool. So I love this paragraph. You know, resentment is the number one offender. He sticks that in quotes. He's trying to get our attention. Number one offender. And if that doesn't have my attention, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. That's fairly strong language. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. I mean, not just most. He usually gives us a way out in the language. He'll say most of the time or usually. So from it stem all forms of spiritual disease. Now, this is the thing that I love when it was pointed out to me. For we've not only been mentally and physically ill, we've also been spiritually sick. Well, up until this point, all 64 of these pages in the appendices and the preamble has been talking about this and what we've been talking about in here the last 4 weeks is being bodily and mentally different. You know, the allergy and the obsession and the cycle that we get on. And this is the first time that he lets us, you know, basically uses the words, we've also been spiritually sick. And then look at this next sentence. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So there's a fine statement of where I should put my energy. And of course, the extraction to me is that this activity that we're engaged in called the steps is the solution, the spiritual to our spiritual malady. But it's just compelling to me that my first line of defense is either a physical or a mental one. I want to go to the psychiatrist. I want to get a new book, a new diet, a new gym membership. I attack the mental and the physical to overcome a mental, physical, spiritual problem. So this is just a beautiful, glowing statement to me. It may be the greatest promise in the book. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So again, we're moving into some specific stuff. There's nothing really to argue with here. We just set it on paper. We look at the institutions and principles with whom we are angry. We ask ourselves why. And this is where I live. Column A and column B. You stepped on my toes, and here's what you did. And if you'll indulge me, I'll convince you that he did me wrong. You know, and that's a common dialogue in the world anyway. But that's where I stay stuck. It's not my habit to look at what it affects and what I. And we're going to see in a later paragraph where the real revelation of this stuff is. But so now we're just chugging along, and we're just getting it down on paper and looking at it.
Okay, I'm going to go to page 65. We went back through our lives, right down at the bottom, the last three lines. We went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Like David said, you know, I just exist in how you screwed me over. That's my whole life. That's my thought life all the time. And in that place, I'm a victim, a complete victim, and nothing is ever my fault. I take no responsibility for anything in my life. It's all someone else's fault. And again, it's important for me to remember the function of this tool, and really what this is it's a mental habit. It's a way of thinking that's really ingrained in my mind. That's really what it is. And the function of it is, number one, it defends my right to drink. And number two, it defends my right to treat anybody in the most appalling way and justify that as okay. That's what this is. It's mental gymnastics. That's really what I'm doing here. And let's look at the word resentment. And we all listened to the Joe and Charlie tapes, and we found out when we listened to them what resentment actually means. It means to re-feel. So I'll give you an example, okay? David, this never happened, but just as an example, David borrowed $5 off me. Okay, he says, Graham, can you lend me $5? And I'm like, and it's in front of people, and I'm like, sure, I'll lend you $5. You know, letting everybody see. Okay, so I gave him the five. I lent him $5, and I have an expectation that I'll get it back. Well, the next time we meet each other, nobody mentions the $5. So here's what starts to happen. My head starts talking to me, and it starts saying, that bastard. I lent him $5, and he's not giving me it back. I need that money for lunch today. Who does he think he is? Right? The next morning, I'm in the shower. I'm in the shower, I'm smiling, I'm happy, washing myself. And then suddenly, I hate that guy, David. He ripped me off for $20. And remember that time that he looked at me funny in the meeting, and remember that time he didn't return my phone call. And the next thing you know, I've now got a big catalogue of perceived slights and wrongs that he's done to me. So I see him at the meeting on Monday night, and David's smiling, walking up to me, and I just go like this. And I just walk right past him. And now I'm ignoring him, and I'm not going to talk to him ever again, because he screwed me over. And then I bump into Mike, and I'm like, Mike, I hate that guy, David. You know what he did to me? Listen to this, and guess what he did at the meeting on Thursday? And the next thing you know, I'm running around bad-mouthing him. I'm running him down to my wife. I'm just telling everybody that will listen that David sucks. And every time I'm talking about it, I get more and more angry. Yeah, so good. It's only got two. I get more and more angry. And that's to refuel it. And that's just a facetious example. Usually in that equation, it would be me was the one borrowing the money. So that's really what I'm doing when I resent people. I'm taking an imagined or a real slight, and I'm refueling it over and over again. And each time I refuel it, I'm putting some more fuel on the fire. I'm cutting myself off from him and from other people. And what I didn't realize was that nobody wants to be around somebody that's just running around bad-mouthing everybody all the time. It's toxic. Nobody wants to be around that. But people don't say, you're crazy, get away from me. They just don't talk to you. They don't call you. They don't hang out with you. They just pull back. So that's really where I live. The world and its people are wrong. And I'm a poor little victim. And nobody understands me. And they never will. So let's have a drink. That's really how it is with me. And it's pretty miserable though.
Yeah, I'm the same. And what never ceases to impress me is that for me, these things are not decisions. You know, I mean, if you've laid this out and said, David, you're going to contrive some resentment, and it's gonna take up all your morning. You're gonna think about this. You're gonna plot the revenge of how you're gonna get back at this guy, and you're not gonna be able to work very effectively. I mean, you wouldn't choose that. Oh yeah, that sounds like fun. But what always blows me away is it's absolutely natural to me. This is my natural mode. And you mentioned the shower. I mean, I can get in the shower, absolutely ready to get ready to meet the day, and come out of the shower thinking about packing my stuff and moving out of this damn house because of what she did. You know what I mean? It's like just one little thought will come in, and then that's all I need is a little bit of time, a little bit of attention. I'm out of here. I don't have to put up with that. And it's all happening in here with me. Nobody's even in the house. And then, as in war, the victor only seemed to win. This very day, this very hour, I am in the middle of an email pissing contest. It's absolutely designed to... I spent time this afternoon crafting a letter, the object of which was for the reader to get it, consume it, and conclude, my God, I'm an idiot. And you know, and just like it's just like the guy with the whiskey and the milk, you know? It's like, while I'm doing that, I have the vague sense I'm being none too bright, you know? This is wrong, but it's so irresistible. Finally, the phone rings. It's Iran, and he happens to be privy to this whole thing because I'm copying everybody. Iran says, "Take the high road, man." And I was like, "Did you read what I just sent a minute ago?" So it's irresistible to me. That's my natural mode. I just need a little bit of bait and a little bit down on the spiritual condition. We got to fight. Let's roll. And it's exactly what Graham described, because if you're doing me wrong, and the boss is doing me wrong, and she's doing me wrong, and I've been screwed over, then guess what? I get to do whatever I want. I get to say whatever I want. You know, whatever. Including getting drunk. Whatever. Because I've been so mistreated.
Okay, let's continue on page 66. Just that middle paragraph. It is plain that a life which includes a deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We find it is fatal. For in harbouring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns when we drink again. And with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm are not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. And you know, it's nice to sit in here and talk about this stuff and get it all out on the table. But the bottom line is suggesting that I have a choice in whether or not I'm resentful. And that's something, like David said, before I came to AA, I didn't realise that. This was just the way I was. It was completely normal to me. I've had some things, two things that really stand out that have happened to me since I got sober in AA, which are really difficult, were difficult to deal with because they were justifiable resentments. A justifiable resentment for me is when somebody really has screwed me over, they did something wrong. I'm not making it up. It really did happen. And it's how I cope with that in sobriety. I'm an alcoholic, I can't drink, so what am I going to do? And some of these resentments I've experienced have been recurring resentments. They've happened, it's the same thing, and it happens over and over again. I've had to deal with it. And the two things that stand out, the first one would be my eldest child was beaten up when he was a baby by his egg donor's boyfriend. And I used to go and pick him up, and he'd have all these bruises all over him. He was like 6, 7, 8 months old. And I had to go to court with the lady that's now my wife. We went to court and we got custody of him and all that. And for about a year, I really just wanted to go over to their house, stop by Bob's gun shop, get something powerful and just waste them, subhuman scum. And the bottom line is, I didn't do that. And instead, what I did was I kept coming to AA meetings and talking to people and writing some inventory from time to time and praying and just act like an adult. But I have to tell you, none of that felt good. None of that felt good. I was in AA. That took like 2 or 3 years to get some sort of peace with that situation. 2 or 3 years of the scab getting pulled off and running it over in my head. Those bastards. How they were wrong. And I was right. So that's very uncomfortable to live with something like that. And then the other one, but you know, and you can wind that one back. That was my fault. I slept with her. You know, I had a part in that. What was I thinking? And then the other one was my second kid got brain damaged when he was born. He had a stroke when he was 3 days old. And that morning we took him to the doctor. And the doctor said he was fine. And then they made us sit in the waiting room for 3 hours while he was having a stroke at the hospital. They said he was fine. And my wife and I knew he wasn't fine. And they saved his life and all that. But now he's brain damaged. What's that all about? Why did you do that to me, God? You want to talk about some resentment towards God? So these are justifiable resentments. And I have to somehow live with that sober and move on. And the bottom line is, these things happen to people. Good things and bad things happen to people. That's just the way life is. But I like to get in there and judge it. The point I'm making is, you know, everybody's like, sue them, sue the doctors, sue them. And I'm like, no, I'm not suing the doctors. Everyone's like, get child support off that bitch. And I'm like, no, I'm not going after the child support. Because I need to stop fighting. I need to stop fighting this. This is reality. And what AA has allowed me to do by coming to these meetings and doing this process on these situations, it's allowed me to stay sober and act like an adult most of the time. And to live with these situations instead of being a drunken fool, running around crying like a big baby. Look at me, everything sucks. Come on, grow up. So that's really the power behind all of this. I absolutely believe we can get through any situation that life throws at me with this process. So it's very powerful. And like it says in the book, I just have to keep moving forward. And I must be free of anger. And we're going to learn this as the technique to do that.
Yeah, and it's important to me to make a distinguish between anger and resentment, you know. I'll pick on you this time. Let's say I'm sitting out on those steps and Graham walks up and for no reason punches me in the nose. I'm going to be angry. That's going to righteously piss me off. And I'll probably spend some time on that. And then Graham decides it's better to go live in Australia the next day, and he leaves, and we never see him again. And then a year from now, I'm sitting on those steps, and you come up and you ask me how I'm doing, and I say, you know, a year ago I was on these steps, and you know what that son of a bitch from Scotland did? You know, I'm still on it. I'm still feeling it. I've still got that. I'm recycling that resentment. So there is, I think anger is a human emotion. You know, we have that. But resentment is, as you suggest, optional. So and that's what he's talking about, this life that includes deep resentment to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. While I was typing that email this afternoon, designed to convince the reader that they were an idiot, my children were looking for my attention. I think I'm cooked to bed. Okay, Daddy's busy. So, I mean, it's a silly example. It's a silly example, but that's squandered time. That could have been put to better use in contact with my children. Oh, no, I've got something I'm trying to prove. And I've spent years in resentment. I spent years on bar stools. When I was drinking, I would land in the therapist's office, and there was two things they wanted to talk about. One was my drinking. And the other was my relationship with my father. I said, I drink whenever I want, and it's not that much. And my father is a complete jerk. What else you got? Let's talk about something else. I hated that guy, and I got a lot of mileage out of it. And I could convince you that he was a jerk. So, certainly decades being squandered there of a potential relationship that I could have had with that man. So I'll fast forward real quick and tell the end of that. He's been gone since 2004. But as we moved through this process, it was a simple letter of apology to him that was the demark of a new relationship with that man. And he and I, when he died, he and I were the best of friends. But I wished him dead. I squandered all those hours because it was his fault. And I demand an apology. Never got one. Never came. But it didn't need to. I changed through this.
Okay. We're going to go to page 66. We turned back to the list. We turned back to the list for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. So, it's saying that this is the key to the future. And like we had talked about, column two really dominates me. That's all I ever think about. And so what it makes for is more drinking. I get so angry and so wrapped up in myself and how I feel that I end up getting drunk again. And like we've said, on my own, I can't just make this all go away. It doesn't go away. It's too powerful. It drags me down. It completely envelopes me, and it becomes reality as far as I'm concerned. And I want to emphasize that. It says fancied or real. A lot of this stuff never even happens. I just make it up in my mind. A lot of people have heard I just went through this thing with my new boss. I convinced myself that she hated me, she was horrible, and she was going to fire me. And I got my wife all wound up about it. I even got some of my co-workers who hadn't met her scared of her. And then she came into town last week and she was really nice to me. And there was no problem. She likes me just fine. So I imagine a lot of stuff that doesn't even happen. I'm actually not living in reality most of the time. What's going on and what I think is going on are two different animals. Anyway. So, how beautiful it is again, like it's done in all the steps, it brings me back. And it says, well, maybe they're all screwed up as well. What about that for an idea? And then we ask God. And I love the simplicity of the book. God, please help me to show this individual the same tolerance, pity, and patience I would grant a friend cancer. You know, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. And how many times on my knees in the morning, just burned up with resentment at people. I just can't stand it. You know, people that wronged me. This is in sobriety. And I'm just praying and I'm saying this prayer about them. And it does work. It gives me relief. And I love this, but this for me is really the theme of this step. Don't argue with people. Don't retaliate. Just stop fighting. You know, in the marriage, or at work, or wherever it is I'm fighting, it's telling me just to stop doing that. Stop it. Why? Because I'm supposed to be trying to be helpful to people, and if I argue with people, and fight with people, and retaliate, it just makes, it perpetuates the whole thing. How powerful is this, just to put my hands up and say, you know what, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Because if I'm in a relationship with someone and we're used to fighting, they're going to want to bring it, and get it going again. How powerful it is just to say, you know, I'm really, really sorry. I understand that you're upset. I've behaved badly in the past, and I'm trying to do better. I can't argue with you. You know, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I'm just not going to argue. And how we can start, how I can start to have a new relationship with people on that basis.
Yeah, we're going short on time. I'm going to shall I press on to the last paragraph? We're on page 67. Referring to our list of. Again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. We saw our faults and listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set the matters straight. This is the money right here. This is what's not happening on the bar stools right now. Okay? Me looking, you know, and in order to turn back to the list, I got to have one. Right? The key to the future is pretty powerful. But now, okay, we get it. You stepped on my toes. You punched me in the face. You stole my money. You did me wrong. You cheated on me. You lied. Blah, 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 blah. What did I do? Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened? So as we go through those things, what I find almost invariably is that I haven't spent any time considering you. You know, I haven't spent any time wondering what your life is like. I'm very big on my own agenda, and the very things that showed up in column B that you did to me are things that I either did to you or I've certainly done to others. And I look when that gets down on in black and white, and I have to look at it. I am capable of hating you for doing the exact same thing that I'm capable of doing. The exact same thing that I'm capable of doing. So now I got a choice. Crumple it up, throw it in the trash, pretend it never happened. That's my first option always. can it be ignored? Or I can realize that maybe this guy is spiritually sick, like me. Maybe he's suffering, like me. And maybe he legitimately did me wrong. But it's things that I'm capable of doing too. And so it starts to soften. In that moment, in column four, it starts to soften.
Yeah, and I think this is why it's so important to have a sponsor. Because I typically will not see this on my own. Even today, sometimes, I can get all caught up in number two, how the cause, what they're doing to me, and I don't see where I'm to blame. It's interesting because back on page 61, just very briefly, it says, admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that other people are more to blame. Now, here in the meetings all the time, well, my sponsor wants me to see my part in it. Okay, well, my part in it suggests that, yeah, I'm somewhat at fault, but that guy's more to blame. And that's not what this is saying in the inventory. It says, put out of our minds the wrongs others have done. It says we disregard the other person involved entirely. That means I'm not thinking at all about what their part is. I'm to focus on mine. And what I do with my father-in-law is I find I'm really selfish with him. I'm self-seeking. I'm nice to him because I know I owe him money, so I better be nice to the guy in case he asks me about it. You know, I'm dishonest with him. I don't really tell him how I feel about hunting and all that stuff. I haven't found a way to talk to him about that. And I'm frightened. I'm frightened that he's better than me. I'm frightened that my wife and kids would be better off if I wasn't there. He could probably look after them better than I can. I don't want to admit that. The Bank of America, dishonest, I signed the contract. I agreed to those terms. Self-seeking, I wanted that money so I could feel good and spend some money, throw some weight around or whatever, so I could pleasure me. Now I don't want to pay it back. I'm selfish. I want the money. I don't want to give it to them. And this other thing as well, the same. Selfish, dishonest, afraid. That's where I'm to blame, and I don't want to look at that. It therefore brings it all out into the light. And as we'll talk about next time, we conclude that resentment inventory really with a picture for the first time in my life of what I'm really like. And it's really all about column four, like David said. That's really the truth of me. And it's a truth that I've never, ever been able to face up to before. And that, I think, is why people run screaming from step four. I'm done.
All right. Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites us all. The Simple Actions group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. There's literature out on the coffee table and sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anybody willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I'd like to thank everybody who participated. Thank everybody for coming tonight. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at
Bella Pizza.
Bella Pizza. Somebody like to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, please?
Hello. Sarah,
alcoholic. Hi, Sarah.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. Yeah.